called the Lobby Pod here. We've got probably our most distinguished guest that I can ever recall out of the old line state, and that is our Senator Ben Cardin. Welcome to the Lobby Podcast.
I appreciate everything you do for our community. Thank you.
Senator, our audience is largely like Annapolis, Washington, county seat, operative staff, business people all in throughout Maryland. So I think they'd love just a little sort of education as to what you're seeing on the ground there. We know it's in the midst of a big election year, but just if you could give folks a little flavor of what's going on in your world in Washington right now, I think all of the professionals and public servants would really appreciate it.
Well, first, Maryland's sort of an island of peaceful discussions taking place compared to what's happening around the rest of the nation. As you know, politics is pretty divisive these days. That's unfortunate, but it's a reality. And we're very close to the midterm elections, so therefore things get even more political than normal. So the best thing we did in Washington is we finished our work. We got the Inflation Reduction Act passed, which helped people in Maryland around the nation deal with healthcare costs and energy costs, and made a major payment towards climate change, U.S. leadership in that regard. We already had passed the infrastructure bill that is being used by the counties in the state of Maryland to repair their infrastructure and build new infrastructure. We passed the PACT Act for our veterans. We passed the CHIPS and Science bill to deal with the microchip industry and invest in science. We got all that done, and then we left town. So we're out now to the midterm elections, which I think is the right thing to do. Elections are generally local, and I think it would have been too politicized for us to stay in any longer. So I was pleased to see that we could recess until after the elections. And so the climate in Washington today is more, let's let the states do their thing in the midterm elections. We have very competitive elections for the control of the United States Senate and the House of Representatives. Obviously, the president's not on the ballot. But I think the Biden administration's record will very much be, I think, a help for Democrats in the midterm elections.
You've got a pretty unique perspective, both from your Maryland experience and your Washington experience, as consumers of political information. You know, we're told this is the biggest legislative effort that a president has put forward since LBJ successfully. Then we hear the other side say that nothing's happening, nothing's going on. In your experience, how would you rate the Biden's legislative record?
Well, quite frankly, I think it is the most impressive record of accomplishments of any administration that I've served on since my time in Congress. And that goes back now 36 years. So I think it's been extremely successful. I mean, it started with the American Rescue Plan, which was critically important to help our state and local governments. We know that they're doing fairly well today, even though they just got through a pandemic. Thank you, President Biden and the American Rescue Plan. Some of these accomplishments were partisan, the American Rescue Plan and Inflation Reduction Act. We're sorry Republicans didn't join us. They should have. But we have major accomplishments that are bipartisan. Already mentioned the Veterans Bill, the PACT Act that helps our veterans in regards to toxic diseases, the CHIP and Science Bill that literally will keep America manufacturing competitive in this new age. We passed the infrastructure bill, the largest single investment in infrastructure, not only roads and bridges, but also broadband, Chesapeake Bay, the ports, the water infrastructure. That was bipartisan. So this Congress has a very proud record. And I think anyone knows that. If you're going to see what's going to happen to consumers in Maryland, they're going to say with the extension of the Affordable Care Act subsidies, that's $2,200 of savings for Marylanders who qualify for those subsidies. Or you take a look at our energy bills, they're going to be going down as a result of what was in the Inflation Reduction Act. So issue after issue, I think the Biden administration has delivered. Are there more things that need to be done? Absolutely. And Americans have a sour mood, not because of President Biden and his accomplishments, but because of inflation, because of war, because of pandemic. And these are issues we have to deal with.
Senator, I want to thank you for raising the Affordable Care Act. You played such a big role in that throughout the course of its maturation and evolution. My daughter, who's doing perfectly well now, is a 13-year-old lacrosse player. She was a childhood leukemia survivor. So thanks to people like you and President Biden and President Sowers over there at Johns Hopkins University, she's doing great. She has those no more lifetime limits. She's got no scarlet letter on her because she had a for insurance purposes, because she had a leukemia when she was a kid. So I just want to thank you and let you know that I talked to a few parents the other day who are dealing, who would have been dealing with lifetime limit issues with their kids' childhood issues. And you brought up the Affordable Care Act. So I had to thank you for all your efforts on that throughout.
Well, thank you. It's more than just the Affordable Care Act. In the Inflation Reduction Act, we also took on the pharmaceutical industry. The first time we really won with negotiating price for pharmaceutical drugs. So at long last, America won't be the outlier in what we pay for prescription medicines. We'll now be able to negotiate price, a cap of $35 a month for Medicare beneficiaries on insulin. So we made major advancements on helping to deal with healthcare costs. And then the Biden administration, their moonshot on cancer, an incredible commitment to reduce the fatalities in cancer by 50%. So we are really committed to dealing with these issues. I mentioned one other bill. I mentioned the CHIPS bill, but part of the CHIPS bill was science, investing in basic science, which helps not only deal with advanced manufacturing, but also deal with biomedical and the discoveries that we've seen. So yes, we've made tremendous advancements in science. And I think every family has a story similar to your daughter in that a diagnosis that a decade ago or two decades ago could very well have been a death sentence. Today, there's great hope.
You've been a big piece of the Maryland model in healthcare. We have a unique situation there. I don't want to get too deep into the Maryland model, but a big piece of that is trying to keep people out of hospitals, trying to keep Marylanders well outside of the hospital. And you've played a big role in this with preventative healthcare in the sense of early detection, multi-cancer early detection tests. This sounds like pretty groundbreaking stuff where, you know, you can basically take one test and discover, you know, what cancer risk you have across a whole myriad of different risks. You played a big role co-sponsoring legislation that would bring this technology to the fore. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Absolutely. I'm very proud of the legislation that I have co-authored, the Medicare Multiple Cancer Prevention Act. It's bipartisan. My colleague, Senator Crapo, and Tim Scott, Republicans, are co-sponsors along with Senator Bennett, a Democrat, and myself. So it's got two Democrats, two Republicans. But I would take you back to the late 1990s when I introduced legislation for the very first time that would have covered comprehensive screening under Medicare. It's hard to understand that we did not have until the 1990s coverage under Medicare for basic screening for detection of colon cancer or breast cancer or many of the just tests that were available at the time, but were not covered under Medicare. And that's because Medicare depended upon Congress acting in order to be able to cover the latest technologies that can save life. Well, the latest technologies today tell us that through a simple blood test, we can determine an individual on several forms of cancer. So we want these tests made available and covered under the Medicare Act. Now, the problem is that we want to be able to act quickly. So this legislation would give the health department the ability to cover the latest technologies without always having to come to Congress for approval so that we can implement these types of screenings earlier and save lives. It saves lives, it saves money. You said about hospitalization. Early detection of cancer saves us hospitalization and cost, as well as saving lives and quality of life. So it's a win-win situation, and we're hopeful this legislation will make a difference in people's lives and the cost of healthcare in the United States.
So they call that multi-cancer early detection. we're great with these acronyms. So they call that the MCED bill. You think that has a shot at getting from, you got some amazing co-sponsors as well. You think it has a shot at getting through the lame duck? I know we got a lot of Marylanders that love to support you in any way.
Yes, I think there's a lot of stakeholder groups that are working very hard to get this done. Senator Crapo is the ranking Republican on the Senate Finance Committee. I serve on the Senate Finance Committee, so does Senator Bennett and Senator Scott. So we have, I think, a critical mass. In the Senate, as you get near the end of the session, it's more to try to find a vehicle that you can put these bills on. If we have a healthcare bill vehicle, I am optimistic we'll have an opportunity to present this bill.
You know, we've had a lot of issues in Maryland and across the country that you've been central at reforming, which is the Medicaid dental situation. So in other words, if you're a young kid or you're a person in poverty, struggling with financial issues, you have Medicaid, you may not have the dental care that is optimal. You may, and in Maryland, we had some really egregious examples I can remember maybe 15 years back, 10 years back. Can you talk about the real work you've done in the dental space to protect these kids and families and seniors when it comes to oral hygiene?
Well, I was motivated on this issue by a tragic circumstance that happened in Maryland in 2007. DeMonte Driver, a 12-year-old living in Prince George's County in Maryland, couldn't get access to simple dental care. He had an abscessed tooth. It would have been a simple procedure to correct it. Instead, his mother tried to get him the help. He did not have coverage under either the Medicaid system or under insurance, and he was unable to get the help. Ultimately, he needed a couple operations and he died. That tragic loss told us we had to do much better on dental care in this country. So I made this a crusade. I worked with Congressman Cummings at the time and others in order to make sure that dental care, particularly for our children, was a required coverage. And we were able, first in the Children's Health Insurance Program, later in the Affordable Care Act, to get mandatory coverage as an essential health benefit for pediatric dental care. That helped because we got our children covered, but we didn't want to stop there. Oral health is critically important to your overall health care. So we now want to have everyone covered under oral health care. So it'd be good if we could expand Medicare to cover that. I've introduced legislation to do that. It's widely supported. We have to find an opportunity to do that. In the meantime, we've introduced legislation to deal with maternal health care because it also affects the child on oral health care. So we're looking for opportunities to expand oral health care as an essential health care benefit broader than it is today. We've made a lot of progress. We still have progress to do.
If you're a small business person in Maryland, or if you have an MBA, minority business, there's a chance that if you're thinking about Senator Cardin, you're thinking about Jerome Stevens. I see him everywhere out there in the Baltimore metropolitan area, in the Washington area, helping small business leaders out. Where is that all coming from? Talk a little bit about your commitment to small businesses, because we see it in Jerome all the time, but we don't get to see what's happening in Washington.
Well, thanks for mentioning Reverend Jerome Stevens. He is a real great asset to the people of Maryland. He is out there all the time representing me with not only small businesses, with the faith community, with so many different interest groups in Maryland, letting them know that we want to hear their concerns. Small business. I was very motivated by small business. My family, my grandfather started a small business and it grew to be a pretty large business. That's entrepreneurship. That's opportunity. That's really bridging the wealth gap in America. So I wanted to make sure that the entrepreneurial opportunities are available to all. So when I was elected to the Senate in 2007, I requested to serve on the Small Business Committee. It wasn't a committee that most freshman members of the United States Senate were seeking to get on. We all want to get on the Foreign Relations Committee, or we want to get on the Finance Committee or Appropriations Committee. But I asked in addition that I could serve on a Small Business Committee. Now, fast forward, I'm now the chairman of the Small Business Committee. So I'm in a position where I can exercise leadership. And my focus is to make sure that America recognizes that small businesses are the growth engine of our economy. That's where more jobs are created. That's where innovation takes place. Just look at this pandemic and look what small businesses were able to do in a creative way to get through this pandemic. But they don't have the resiliency. They need help. They need help in capital for venture capital opportunities. They need help in dealing with the healthcare costs. They need, they have cyber issues. They need help. So I have singularly focused our committee's attention on expanding opportunities to traditionally underserved communities. And last year was the largest growth year of new small businesses that we've seen. And it was led by minority small businesses. We need their entrepreneurship in this country. We need to expand the opportunities. And we saw when we originally passed the first Paycheck Protection Program for COVID-19 to help small businesses, that those that were left behind were those who didn't have established banking relations, because you needed to deal with a bank. So we have tried to compensate for that, and later rounds we did. So we are focused on providing opportunities to minority businesses and underserved communities. And I'm very proud that we've increased the number of women business centers in Maryland by 3. We've gone from 1 to 4 women's business centers that provide awesome. The technical help for women to be able. We're led by women entrepreneurs, by the way. That's the fastest growing categories.
And we're going to be saved by women, right, Senator?
Absolutely. No question about it. I'm going to tell you, we also had opened our very first Veterans Business Outreach Center at College Park to help our veterans. So we are really focused on helping entrepreneurship in our community, recognizing that our economy depends upon small business.
I got a very important question for you. I think it's going to be an upper, not a downer here, but you know, you were longtime friends with Ted Venatoulis. He passed a year ago today. The recording of this will come a little bit after, but we lost Ted Venatoulis a year ago. Nobody for me in my life was more about democracy and taking the small everyday steps to make it happen than Ted Venatoulis and Senator Ben Cardin. People that realize that big wins take leadership, take nurturing. You got to be in position. Ted was instrumental in the effort to try to save our son and bring it under local control. And then he brought the Baltimore banner to town with my local hero, Stuart Batum. And you've got some young people in your office. You got Maddie Allman. You got Kimberly Cradiville. You got people that are coming to Washington, and they're learning about democracy in a whole different way than I would guess you, me, and Ted did. And I just would love for you to talk about, say whatever you would like about Ted, but I'd also like to talk, I'd like you to explain the hard work you're doing on election integrity. Because at the end of the day, we can't have the conversations we had with Ted Venatoulis and about the free press and all of these things if you're not doing exactly what you're doing on election integrity. So I think it's important for our audience to hear it.
Well, Ted was my friend. We were colleagues. We partnered on many activities over the years. We enjoyed politics together. We were together frequently on behalf of candidates. Ted, to me, was a frontline warrior to protect our democracy. He believed very strongly in the democratic values of America, and he wanted to protect those at all costs. So, yes, he was a strong advocate for particular candidates, but he really wanted to see participation. He wanted to see all voters participate. He wanted to make sure that democracy really did represent the will of the people, and that we had to protect the institutions of democracy, including the election process. So yes, we were involved in a lot of specific elections, but I think the greatest crusade, he recognized that one of the great institutions for a democracy is free press and investigative reporting. And investigative reporting is becoming almost obsolete in America because of the way we get our news. We get our news in through the internet, and we get it spoon-fed to us, and anyone can become a reporter today. It's very hard to get objective news. You don't have the same type of investigative local journalists that we used to have. When I first started in government, we had dozens of reporters covering everything I was doing in government. Today, you can't find hardly anyone is doing investigative reporting on what's going on in the General Assembly or what's going on in the House of Representatives or in the United States Senate. So Ted wanted to change that. And Stu Bainum, his partner with the establishment of Banner, they wanted to buy the Sun. I'm sorry, they were not able to buy the Sun and turn it in basically to a nonprofit, a community newspaper, which is so desperately needed. That it's not to say the Sun Papers doesn't do a good job or the Banner is needed. We need investigative reporting. We need competition for investigative reporting. And that's what Ted Venatulis was all about, trying to establish for our community. And the jury's still out on this. We'll see how the Banner makes it. I hope it can make it because I like competition. But I miss Ted Venatulis, I must tell you. He was just an incredible force for democracy. And as we all know, after January 6th and even before, our democratic institutions have been under assault. So we need more Ted Venatulis's. We need more warriors to protect our democratic institutions.
Yeah, he wrote that. He wrote a book called The House Shall Choose, which is all about sort of what happens in the electoral process when go haywire and things get unpredictable, what the process is for figuring out who the next president's going to be. You guys just passed legislation down there that codified, right? The vice president is playing a ceremonial role that just came out of the House, I think. So you know, Ted's book is actually like the predicate for a lot of the reforms you're working on right there in DC to curb this January 6th craziness.
Two things on that.
First, let me know if I'm stretching things too far. You know, I love it.
The House has passed the Electoral Reform Act. The Senate committee has approved it by near unanimous vote, and we hope it'll come up in the lame duck session. It makes it clear that the role of the vice president, basically the role of Congress, is more ministerial than it is substantive to confirm the actions of the state, that we don't exercise independent judgment as to who won got the popular vote. That's the responsibility of the state certification process and the courts to make sure it's done properly. We hope we can pass that. That would avoid any of the allegations made about any form of legitimacy on those challenging the results of the election on January the 6th. But there's a second part to this that Ted Venatulis felt very strongly about. And that is, it's always been fair game in elections to motivate your voters, to get your voters out. That's fair game. That's what elections are about. We go out and convince people that it's important for them to vote, that the issues they care about, our candidates support, come on out and support our candidates. What has never been done, or I should say it's never been done, but what has never been condoned is trying to keep people from voting. To actually say, well, this group of voters or more likely to vote for my opponent, therefore, let's make it difficult for them to vote.
Right.
We don't do those things. Right. That's not what a democratic country does. But guess what? Recently, we've seen state legislatures doing exactly that, passing laws that they know will make it more difficult for a group of voters that traditionally vote for their opponents. And that should have no place in American politics. And Ted Venatulis understood that. And that's why... The Voting Rights Act and the reforms in the Voting Rights Act. Voting Rights Act was passed in the 1960s.
Right.
And now we still have the same problems today.
Right. You got it. You're refighting the fight. That's what we got to do.
Absolutely.
Chris Lynch was a big, just has been a big presence, I know, to all the people in Maryland, your chief of staff. We just want to give he and the whole team you've put together over there a big thanks, because it's as Marylanders, the home of Barbara Mikulski, Mike Miller, Steny Hoyer, Ben Cardin, we all know, being so close to Washington, that knowing the process counts for so much, and being an active part of it and a leader in it is really put Maryland at the forefront of the conversation, and your whole team has just been instrumental in giving Maryland that voice. We want to thank you for it. I want to give you two hot tips One is watch out for Brock Yetzo, the head of the Allman Cancer Fund. He's doing a big boxing match in DC called Haymakers for Hope. So look out for that.
Okay.
I tried that, Senator, once. It was the most challenging thing you could ever do, but look out for that. He's doing great things for cancer. And then finally, here's a hot tip from a retired political operative. Check out the North Baltimore County Democratic Club online, because their Instagram is super hot. They got great infographics that you would dig, Senator. And, you know, it's just great to see Democrats very active and creative in a place where I grew up. I thought we didn't have many Democrats up in North Baltimore County. So I just tickled to see it. And I think your leadership's inspiring them.
Well, thanks for that advice. You know, we are very proud of the activity throughout Maryland. Look, one of the lessons I've learned is that I'm not going to get 100% of the vote. I've given up on trying to get 100% of the vote, but I represent 100% of the people. And it's important that they have a voice, that everyone has a voice. And that if you show respect for communities that traditionally have not voted that heavily for your party, you can make great inroads, not necessarily in getting votes, but getting confidence that you are listening and representing them. And they have a better feel for our democracy and a better confidence in our democracy. And at the end of the day, they'll treat you fairly. And I found that true in all parts of Maryland. So just recently I was out in the most western part of our state, which has a long, long tradition of loyalty to the Republican Party, which I respect greatly, because it's heartfelt and it goes back well before the current problems of this Republican Party. And I'm treated with great respect. And guess what? I even get a few votes out there.
No doubt about it. Senator, thank you for all your leadership. Senator Ben Cardin, he's our leader in Washington, D.C. And we're so grateful for you and your whole team. Thank you, Senator, for joining us on the pod.
Damian, thank you for doing this. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator. Love you, man. You're doing awesome.
Thanks.